pregame show for your day. Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder on News Radio WTAM 1100.
Wills ways to save over the weekend. I was traveling. So proud of my daughter, Serena. Got her master's degree at Liberty University, Lynchburg, Virginia. So we were traveling. My son, Nate, was with us for a while. And I mentioned this, Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News, Wills ways to save the deal, boss. Traveling together, it's funny. Everybody got in the car. They had to charge their phone. So we got wires running all over the place. You leave a hotel, you want to make sure you got your phone chargers. We live with smartphones anymore, you know?
We do, and today we are merging the modern-day emergency kit with a smartphone. Because if I asked Serena, and by the way, congratulations on her, that's a huge accomplishment.
Pass it along. I just paid the bill.
No.
Still paying.
And inspired and raised and guided and mentored, and that's amazing.
Thank you.
Serena may not know right now where her emergency kit is, and if she is smart enough to have one, which I know she is,
yes.
It's not always at arm's reach.
I'll guarantee you she has no idea, so help her and me and everybody else.
Anyone listening right now, your vehicle emergency escape tool is the world's fastest smartphone charger, one of them at least. It's called the Charge Hub. Charge, brake, escape. That's really what it comes down to. It's a two-port smartphone charger. So you pop this into your cigarette lighter DC adapter.
Okay.
And it immediately converts it into two smart charging outlets. Great for Apple, Android. That's fantastic. The charge part, so the part that actually goes into the DC adapter, then doubles as a tungsten steel-tipped glass breaker.
Oh, wow.
So heaven forbid your car gets submerged.
Right.
You can break your window very easily and escape. The top part of the smartphone charger reveals a razor-sharp seatbelt cutter. Obviously, the seatbelt cutter is always protected, but when you need it, you pull the charger out, and you can then cut a seatbelt. It's great to have. Also, if you want to be a good Samaritan, as we all do, it's good to have on you. It is, again, a dual smartphone charger bill. You get two today for under $30. They're amazing chargers, but they can also save your life.
That's even more of a reason to make sure you click on and get the deal. Good stuff. Matt Granite, the deal boss, watch him on 3 this morning, back here same time tomorrow, and each morning at this time. Watch him on, follow him on Twitter, too, at Matt Granite. Always some good deals. Matt, thanks much. Have a good day.
Awesome.
Mike Snyder Sports Mornings, 15:45 past. Morning, pal.
Good morning, Bill. Indians and Astros went at it in Houston last night. Final game of the series. Carlos Carrasco, Lance McCullers in a duel in the 7th.
5 hits for the Astros, 1 hit for the Indians. No runs for either team. The next delivery, swung and blasted. Deep right center field. It is gone. Brian McCann hits his 4th home run, and Houston has a 2-0 lead here in the 7th inning.
Astros go on to win a 3-1. Tribe got a run in the 9th on a ground out by Edwin Encarnacion, but that was it. Carlos Carrasco, the hard luck loser. Lance McCullers was dealing for Houston. He was perfect through 5 innings. Kipnis broke up the perfect game. Now the Tribe gets the day off. They'll be in Chicago tomorrow for the first of 2 against the Cubs. Melky Cabrera made his Indians debut yesterday in right field. While he went 0-for-3 at the plate, he was impressive in right field. In the first inning, he gunned down a runner trying to go to third with a nice throw. So hopefully he will help. Boy, he looks, though, like he still needs to get some at-bats in. Cavaliers reviewed the tape of Game 3 yesterday, and Ty Lue is looking for more of the same in Game 4.
You know, remind those guys, bringing the physicality 1-5, picking up full court, being on bodies. And the biggest thing is the multiple effort, making a second effort. And we made some mistakes defensively, but we covered for one another last night. We really continue to keep moving.
Yeah, no time to relax. So that was just one. And Celtics guard Terry Rozier looking to bounce back.
Look over the film, go back, see all the mistakes we made. How can we correct them for Monday? You know, we know it's not going to be easy Monday either, but, you know, we got to come out and play better. I feel like we needed this to get us ready for Monday.
All right, we need the same Cavs team that was there Saturday, but you can expect definitely a different Boston team tonight. 8:30 tip, we'll have it for you right here. Out west, Golden State crushed Houston 126-85 to take a 2-1 series lead. Steph Curry with 35. Hockey, Las Vegas Golden Knights, improbable season continues. First-year expansion team, they are in the Stanley Cup Finals. After disposing of Winnipeg, they await the winner now between Washington and Tampa. Browns off-season training exciting activities begin tomorrow. And another terrific marathon in Cleveland. Sarah Horrible of Westlake, the women's winner. Still waiting for official men's winner, though. Daniel Mespun, who crossed the line first. But several other top runners complained that he was wearing a shirt over his marathon bib until the final part of the race, causing confusion on the course. And that is still under review. Coming up at 5:45, what LeBron did that didn't show in the box score to help the Cavs win Game 3. That story coming up. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
Bill Zimfer on a couple stories we'll be following for you throughout the day. Us and them, them being China, and us being trade and back and forth. Hey, Bill, good morning. These talks are underway. I thought I saw Mnuchin say they were going to delay tariffs. What's going on?
Yeah, a couple of days of talks were held last week between Chinese officials and U.S. officials as they came here to meet in Washington. And as a result, Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, said tariffs are now on hold because a trade war has been averted. But the further you look into this, Bill, and you'd have to chalk one up for China. It appears that China has come away from these talks with everything that really they wanted. If you look back, this all started when the United States sent a delegation over to China to talk about trade. We had some pretty big demands for them, including a reduction of $200 billion in China's surplus with the United States and China's government restraint on a $300 billion plan to upgrade advanced technology in China. Well, as it turns out, as a result of these talks, China has agreed to buy more U.S. products. Okay, nothing specific there, and says they will try to open up more markets to U.S. goods. The demands, the two big demands the United States had at the beginning of all this, Bill, have gone away.
President Trump wrote the art of the deal and may not be very happy about this one then when he reads about it. Let's switch over to something, though, he's had some success on, but we haven't closed this thing yet. North, South Korea, the South Korean leader is heading to our country, right?
Yeah, Moon Jae-in is, in fact, will leave today. He will speak with President Trump tomorrow. But the two spoke over the weekend as well via telephone. And, of course, they're talking about North Korea and exactly what is going on. In the middle of all this, Bill, we get a disturbing report from the New York Times over the weekend that presidential aides are concerned that the president really doesn't have a grasp on the issues with North Korea and has resisted any detailed briefings on the matter. So we'll find out a lot more this week in this meeting tomorrow. The president is expected to say to Moon Jae-in, hey, what happened? I thought everything was going swell over there. All of a sudden, we've got North Korea blustering again, and now they're upset about a dozen employees of a restaurant they say were lured and kidnapped by South Korea.
Interesting. Bill Zimfer on a couple of the stories nationally, internationally, we'll be following for you today. Bill, thanks.
You're welcome, Bill.
Mentioned I was at Liberty University, Lynchburg, Virginia, over the weekend. My daughter picked up her master's degree. Former President Jimmy Carter was the speaker.
Recently, I've changed my mind about the biggest challenge that the world faces. I think now it's a human rights problem, and it is the discrimination against women and girls in the world.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. We're on Your Money and Betting. Jordan Goodman is at MoneyAnswers.com. All right, big story recently. Supreme Court. New Jersey said, look, if Vegas can do it, every state should be able to. Play this out for me. What do you think?
It's going to be huge. Lots betting all over the place on regular games, Indians games and Cavs games and so on. The casinos are going to do very well with this as well, doing things online. I mean, so there are stocks to buy like MGM or Caesars or Penn Gaming.
Sure.
This is really going to be a huge change to the because now you're not going to have to do the underground, the bookies anymore. This is going to come out from under the shadows, Bill.
It's almost like prohibition, you know?
It is like prohibition.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically only sports betting's only been allowed in Vegas. It's been going on, obviously, but now it's going to be everywhere. And so it's going to be a huge business. And there'll probably be some places in Ohio that will open up to do this as well.
Jordan Goodman at MoneyAnswers.com. Great story, though, to follow. And you're right, just as an industry, I even saw Mark Cuban say, look, I mean, in reality, the value of any sports franchise probably went up as well.
Exactly, because as people bet on it, people are more interested in it, and we're going to go to games more. A lot of money going to be made. A lot of money going to be lost as well, Bill.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, you don't want to kind of succumb to the temptation of betting just because it makes it easier. Doesn't mean you have to throw your money away. It should be entertainment, not a way to make money.
Interesting. Jordan Goodman, MoneyAnswers.com, the website. Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you, Bill.
Monday to you.
And to you, my friend, President Trump, and whether or not there was a spy. I thought this was kind of funny. I it's his Justice Department. He can't wait till Monday after 8 when they open to maybe call. So he tweets yesterday, hey, I'm going to demand they investigate. What's the story here?
Yeah, he wanted to get out in front, make sure that they, if they had their to-do list ready to go, scratch out whatever you had at the beginning and put this in there. He wanted to make sure that he was demanding that the Department of Justice would look into whether or not the FBI and the DOJ, so again, he's asking them to investigate themselves, infiltrated or surveyed the Trump campaign for political purposes, and if any such demands or requests were made by anybody in the Obama administration, which in and of itself, kind of, it's the start of what he's already had doing. He's had the Department of Justice already beginning some information and collection and investigation, but now he's asking for even more along that line. And this comes on the heels of what could be, literally, this could intensify the brouhaha between Robert Mueller, his investigation, and Trump and his legal team. But this is on the heels of Rudy Giuliani saying that Mueller recently shared a timetable suggesting that the probe could end by September 1st if Trump were to sit down for an interview in July, which by this demand doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Back on the spying story, you New York Times ran a piece the last few days too about this, that yeah, there are people within DOJ that, or within the FBI, that were kind of alluding to, yeah, we had somebody we talked to every now and then, I guess.
Yeah, there was, according to reports, they're saying there was this sort of somebody in the educational profession on some level that was a part of the intelligence community, the FBI. Both articles, one for the Washington Post and then one for the New York Times, refused to give up their sources, as you would sort of expect. But they're saying that there was this guy who was a part of an intellectual community that was approaching, in the case of the Russia investigation, Papadopoulos and having conversations with Papadopoulos. Now, how those instigated, how that was brought about, unclear at this point, but it sounds like it was more of just following in line with the way the FBI conducts their investigations than any sort of an assertion that somebody put an informant in the Trump administration on some level.
I thought it was funny. He tweeted early in the day, and then the DOJ had to respond later in the afternoon. And it's all on a Sunday when we're not open.
Right, like the people at DOJ, like, hey, it's a Sunday. I'm taking a break. I'm going to watch The Walking Dead. Why do I have to respond to the president here?
What now? All right, yeah. Michael Bauer on it. Thanks, Michael.
You got it, Bill. Have a great morning.
Rush Limbaugh will have more on this, I am sure, following the news at noon on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Funny skit to SNL, President Trump around the table. It was almost like a Sopranos scene.
Mr. President, welcome. Is it just you?
No, I'm meeting some friends.
Okay, great. Well, let me know if you have any questions.
I do, actually. Is HPV different than HIV?
I'll give you a minute.
See the video. It's kind of funny. WilsonSnyder.com. You can check it out. Again, Rush Limbaugh follows the news at noon, WTAM 1100. They're all sad stories, don't get me wrong, but you've got one about a girl that came over here to study from Pakistan, right?
Right. She arrived here about 6 months ago. Sabika Sheikh is her name. She's from Karachi, Pakistan, was here as part of a foreign exchange service program. Was living with a host family here and talked before she came here, Bill, in excited terms about her trip to the United States and how happy and excited she was to be coming here to study. On Friday, of course, her life was brought to an end, along with those of 7 classmates and 2 teachers, 10 people all together dying in the latest school shooting. Santa Fe, Texas, a community southeast of Houston, small agricultural community, and yet facing this sort of problem that we've seen in so many bigger cities.
Happened Friday. Shooter was in court Friday night. What's going on there?
Demetrius Pogorchis is his name. He's a 17-year-old student at that school. We don't know anything really about the motive. There are some parents who are talking about this student and interactions that their kids had with him. The mother of the first girl to be shot to death said that her daughter had shunned the suspect here, that he had made romantic advances, and said she simply wasn't interested in him. We don't know if that was what's behind this, but there also were some troubling postings that he had made on social media going back months and months, Bill.
Hey, finally, Jim, Texas, I think 17, they want to put you to death. Supreme Court says, no, it's got to be 18. I know that's way down the road, don't get me wrong, but still that's something that'll have to be worked out as well, what the final charges are.
Yeah, Governor Greg Abbott yesterday told me that he's hoping for swift, Texas-style justice. What that means, we don't really know. But I suspect that if this does go to trial, if there's not an insanity plea, and that this isn't set aside, that there could be potential death penalty of charges against him.
Our Jim Ryan, Santa Fe, this morning. Jim, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
Santa Fe, Texas, where Jim Ryan is. Last night, Billboard Music Awards, Kelly Clarkson.
They also wanted me to do a moment of silence. And I'm so sick of moment of silence. Like, God, it's not working. So instead of a moment of silence, I want to respect them and honor them. With tonight, y'all, let's, in your community, where you live, your friends, everybody, let's have a moment of action. Let's have a moment of change.
Ironically, this school, one of the schools that they did a walkout a few weeks ago when it comes to gun violence. So we know the script. Let's talk about it. Tim Dimoff, President, CEO of Sachs Consulting Investigative Services, looking into this. Tim, good morning. One thing I noticed in this story is evidently he walks into school, it's 90-some degrees, and he's got a long coat on. Now, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but that was one of the ways he got this gun in there.
Yeah, it was, and he had been wearing that coat and boots as part of his regular clothing just about every day from the information we got. And basically, he was testing. He was testing whether anybody would object, anybody would check him out, anybody would search his jacket, anybody would question him. Once again, in almost all these shootings, something is done to test the security. And that's where we've, you know, got to improve our awareness where we see something that's questionable. But there's no doubt about it. He did it because he wanted to see, you know, and feel comfortable coming in there one day with a gun underneath that jacket.
Tim, any parent this morning listening or school administrator taking a deep breath, you're winding down the school year. You don't want, you know, anything at all to happen, don't get me wrong, but it's yet another reminder when it comes to make sure security wherever you're responsible is the best you can do.
Yeah, and the bottom line here is basically, when a shooter enters a school, ironically, we've really trained well. We respond well, even though we have deaths. Where our problem is, it's at the door, it's before the door. And I mean both physical security, and I mean counseling, and I mean observing, and I mean filtering out kids as they come into the school, getting kids help, monitoring social media. Just too many times there were just too many clues, and we've just failed to move forward outside or before the door.
Tim Dimoff, President, CEO, Sachs Consulting Investigative Services. The first memorial service was held yesterday. Tim, thanks.
Thank you.
PGA Golf Pro TV host on 18 Holes, Golf TV, Swing Clinic, Fox Sports, Yes Network. Jimmy Hanlon on a Monday morning, hearing him, of course, on Sunday mornings on WTAM 1100. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. Morning, Jimmy.
How's it going, guys?
Good, buddy. Hey, before we get to the Byron Nelson, some local golf news, and you retweeted this, and I did see that they've made an announcement. Mayfield Sand Ridge, two clubs that have been together for a while, announcing their tweet, a proud new era, as Mayfield Sand Ridge, Monte Ahuja, acquiring both courses. His name, of course, on the hospital building in many places over at UH. He purchased Barrington a while back, very successful businessman, and obviously, I guess, believes in golf as well. So that's some interesting golf news first, Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, great for Mayfield Sand Ridge. The stuff that Monty's been able to do at Barrington has been spectacular. And, you know, he can't own them all unless he owns the first three, right? He just keeps buying them up.
That so. He does. I got a chance to play Sand Ridge Thursday. I'm going to play there in a little invitational. You got any advice? Yeah.
Don't hit it in the rough at Sand Ridge. That's my advice right
now.
Keep it in the fairway.
He doesn't hit it there that often.
Yeah, if you do hit it in the rough, grab that wedge out of your bag. Nothing else.
Get it out. I got you. I'll keep that in mind. Okay. All right.
Jimmy, we look back at the Byron Nelson. Aaron Wise wins at 23 under. I guess another example of how good these players are. I'm just looking at the final totals. You're like 15 under. You finished 10th. But he was spectacular, wasn't he?
Oh, young kid, I'll tell you, he's a super young kid. I'll tell you, guys, he played for Casey Martin. Remember Casey Martin that had the bad leg there that you know, had to end his playing career? Well, Casey is the golf coach at Oregon now. So Aaron played golf for him and should be a senior right now at Oregon, but left early to be able to play professional golf, and by the looks of it, it was a good decision on his part.
Well, he put it all together. You know, Jimmy, I wanted to ask you, when we watched the tournaments, and of course, you know, from round one to the final round, and when you think of it, just one hole can decide everything mentally for these guys. It's such a mental game, isn't it?
No, I mean, it absolutely, at this level it is. I mean, and you see, like you said, we have a kid like Aaron Wise come out of nowhere and shoot 23 under. I mean, you don't have the ability to make mistakes. We all watch it on Sunday intently, but they all know that you can make that big mistake on Thursday and really play yourself out of the golf tournament. And even Jordan Spieth said this week, you know, I haven't put myself in a position to win a golf tournament after round one in a long, long time. And they know that, you know, whether it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you just can't make those big mistakes or you have no chance because these guys just shoot too good of scores.
It really is amazing. One bad shot, and that can really turn everything. You mentioned Spieth. I think we're looking at him to, you know, maybe as a challenger for the U.S. Open. Where do you see Jordan at right now with his game?
He's struggling really bad with the putter. I mean, I hate to throw the word out there, but Yips has been put by his name a lot lately. He missed a putt that was 15 inches long this week in Texas in the tournament. He's got something going on, and it's a nerves problem, and we've all either had them or we've seen friends that's had it. And if you get the yips, it's not always a fundamental thing. Sometimes it's just in your mind, and he's got to get over it because it can be a career ender for somebody like that. He's the third best ball striker on the tour, and he's ranked 200th in putting right now. 200th in putting doesn't win U.S. Open.
If he played with me and Snyder, we'd give those. I mean, I don't know why he's even putting those.
Well, that's where he needs to go. He needs to play with you two then.
Jimmy Hanlon for another minute. All right, they take the PGA Tour to Fort Worth, then Memorial, May 31st through June 3rd. Beautiful Muirfield. You played that in a week or two ago. Tiger says he'll be there. I see the Pro-Am. He and Peyton Manning will get together. And even Jack says Tiger might be on the verge, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think Tiger's going to – I said at the beginning of the year, I feel like his best chance to win will be at the British Open. I think it gives him enough time to get his game ready, and it seems like he's progressing in that way. But you just never know. He's played really, really good at the Memorial through his years, and it's going to be a great field there. I mean, it's going to be just as good as anything that we've seen to this point on the PGA Tour all year long and preparing for, the U.S. Open. So we'll play in Texas this week, then 2 out of 3 weeks will be Memorial and U.S. Open, and hopefully, golf gets exciting around this time. I mean, Augusta comes and we're all pumped up, and then we have a little lull outside of the Players Championship of really every single week. But now starting, Memorial, U.S. Open, British comes less than a month after, it gets going pretty well.
All right. Jimmy's tip of the week, keep it out of the rough. Keep that in mind. If you get a chance to play, enjoy. Jimmy Hanlon, follow him on Twitter. We'll talk again next Monday. Thanks, pal.
All right. You got it.
See you,
guys,
buddy. Complete Cavaliers coverage. Your morning Cavs update brought to you by Huntington. Want a bank that believes in looking out for its customers? Welcome to Huntington. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. John Michael will join us tonight on the call, the broadcast. He's here now as the Cavs attempt to build off Game 3, hosting the Celtics in Game 4, the Eastern Conference Final, after a pounding on Saturday. John, good morning. Mike, good morning. I guess Coach Lou says more of the same tonight, right, John?
Yeah, I don't expect too many adjustments. And in fact, you know, we really didn't expect too many adjustments going from games 2 to 3, despite the fact that the Celtics won both of the games on their home floor. So I think much of the same. I think it's what the Cavs, you know, have been saying. Hey, we hit our shots, we do our thing, play our kind of basketball, we're going to win some games in this series. And when LeBron takes 12 shots and scores 27 points, means a lot of good things for this team, a lot of good signs. I think maybe even more importantly, on the defensive end, the Cavs hold the Celtics to 39%. Those things run together. I mean, when LeBron doesn't have to play those high usage minutes, when he only has to take 12 shots, it allows him to play a little harder on the defensive end, and he was the one who got it going momentum-wise for the Cavaliers defensively. They were all over the Celtics, and hopefully they can keep that momentum rolling into tonight, and we can make this a three-game series heading back to Boston for Game 5.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me, John, though, how one game can be so different from the other in an NBA playoff series.
I mean, look at the Golden State series. I mean, everybody thought after, you know, Golden State was all over Houston that, you know, Houston was going to fade away. Houston thumped Golden State game two. They come back to Golden State. Golden State's all over Houston in game three. And you're right, Mike. I mean, this is a very reactive league. You know, people are jumping on, hey, Boston's already going to the finals and Brad Stevens has outsmarted, you know, Tyronn Lue and the Cavaliers, and the Cavs have no chance to get back in this. Now, all of a sudden, people are, you know, the other way around. You know, all the Cavs have the momentum. Vegas has Cavs as the favorites again, Mike, even though they're down 2-1 in this series. So, hey, it's life in the NBA. You stick with the ebbs and the flows. You hear LeBron time and time again say, no, I'm not worried that we're down a game. No, I'm not worried that we dropped the first two. It's why he's been through the wars before. He knows what this game is like, and hopefully he and the Cavaliers can take care of business here this evening.
Yeah, more of the same it'll take, because you know Boston will be better. I think it was encouraging, as you touched on it, John, the supporting cast, really from the starters, JR and George Hill, and even the guys off the bench really provided a lift the other night.
Huge, Mike. I mean, it was the first time in these playoffs that six Cavaliers have finished in double figures, and we're talking about a team that throughout the playoffs has virtually had only two guys in double figures in terms of those averages throughout the playoffs. So, yeah, up and down the list. I thought Larry Nance Jr. was really, really good in that ball game for the Cavs. This is a Celtics team that has a lot of athletic bigs. This is more of a Nance series than the Toronto series was, where he was used sparingly. So we may see more of him. Kyle Korver, what can you say about him? He had a perfect night from the field, 5 of 5 from the floor, 4 of 4 from behind the line. And Hill got the Cavs started. He had those 11 points in the opening quarter, more than he had had in the entire first two games combined. And we know what JR can do as well. So, I mean, again, this is why there was not a lot of panic around this team after the first two games, because they know what they can do when they're playing their kind of basketball. Now the trick is do that consistently, and hopefully they can roll throughout the rest of this series.
John Michael with the call tonight. Cavs tip-off show with Mike Snyder at 8. We'll start things with Cavs now. Nick Camino live courtside at the Q at 6. Then Cavs Celtics game 4, 8:30 tonight, WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers. All right, that's tonight. Then we're back, Wednesday there, and then Friday here.
Yep, it's every other day until a winner's determined. Start time for each and every game is 8:30.
Thanks, John.
Yep, guys, take care.
Well, absolutely, Bill. And the Farm Bill is a bill that, look, many, many years ago, they decided to tag SNAP program, the food SNAP program, in with the Farm Bill, because they wanted urban Congress people to be able to work with, you know, the rural Congress people and get some things done. And that's the reason it's been brought together. It's always been an issue bringing the two together. But the bill fell on the House floor on Friday, which is a big disappointment, because there were so many good things in there, including some good legislation for Ohio farmers. And at the same time, there were work requirements for people that were on food stamps. So a good piece of legislation where the Democrats wouldn't support it because the work requirements, and the Republicans, many of the Republicans on the far right, wanted the Good Lad bill, which has nothing to do with this food stamp bill. Good Lad bill is an immigration bill to be brought to the floor as well.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of politics with this thing. You got farmers wondering about the future. You got social service agencies maybe wondering what they have to do as well in the future. And I guess another problem with this, as you've remind us time and time again, no matter what you do, in a way you have to pass something in the House that'll get through the Senate, or at least get close to where you can get close in a conference committee, right?
Well, absolutely. It's another one of the problems, Bill. We have over 500 and some bills over in the Senate, and 400 plus of those bills, over 440, are just sitting. Because the Senate doesn't move the bills unless they agree with them, which is a big, big problem. One of the reasons why when many of your listeners say, well, Congress isn't getting their job done, it's really the Senate that's not getting their job done in many cases.
Yeah, that frustration looks like it's maybe one of the reasons in the background, at least. Speaker Ryan says, I'm going to be out of here as well. The Friday vote was 198 to 213 on the Farm Bill. All right, Congressman Jim Renacci, busy week ahead, though, I'm sure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great week.
Last night, when you think of all the runs that are being hit and home runs and whatnot, we had a classic. It was old school baseball last night with Carlos Carrasco and Lance McCullers. And be honest, Bill, I thought the Indians were really on the verge of being not only no-hitted, but McKellar's throwing a perfect game. That's
right.
How impressive he was until Jason Kipnis got a single to lead off the sixth, but still seven innings of one-hit baseball. And, you know, McKellar's is part of the best pitching staff in baseball, Bill, and, you know, they held the Indians, a ball club, to just seven runs over the weekend series in the three games, but they've been doing that to everybody. Far and away the best pitching staff in baseball with a team ERA of 2.5, and the Indians got a look at that firsthand.
And Tom, Carlos Carrasco really pitched well enough to win, didn't he?
Yeah, Mike, Carlos Carrasco has pitched twice on this road trip and pitched well enough to win, but loses both games on the road. So it's not because the Indians aren't getting good starting pitching, but, you know, we've talked a lot about the back end of the Indians bullpen, and obviously it's really hurting them big time, but the Indians have also been pretty inconsistent offensively. Now, I give them a pass this weekend because of how good Houston's pitching is, but the Indians need to get more consistent offensively, and, you know, Mike, that's why they brought up Melky Cabrera, and, you know, we'll see what he's going to be able to give the Indians.
Well, let's follow up on that. Tommy made his Tribe debut. How do you see his role being as a member of the Indians?
Yeah, Mike, he's primarily going to play every day in right field. Now, as Terry Francona said in his office and on the pregame show, they're not going to run Melky Cabrera into the ground. I think the Indians need to see what they have here, but the jury is still out. I mean, how many times have we seen a guy miss all of spring training? He wasn't signed until April 25th. And, you know, he only played 10 games in Columbus. Now, hopefully, Melky Cabrera is going to get, you know, in midseason form here quickly. But, boy, that's asking a lot when you've missed that much time and have so few at-bats on the AAA level. But the Indians are looking for some offensive help. And, you know, it's kind of been the theme this year. They've been doing a lot of looking. And Columbus has sent a lot of guys to Columbus or to Cleveland,
yeah,
either out of the bullpen or now as a position player, and, you know, the jury is still out.
I think they'll put up a little bit in the outfield because of his age, although he had a good throw last night, if they can get a couple of good bats. And Kipnis, who has been working hard, finally came through with a hit last night.
Yeah, well, he broke up that perfect game, yeah, bit. Hopefully he'll get going.
Yeah. All right, off day today, recoup before the Cubs for a couple, starting tomorrow in Chicago, Hammy.
Well, it is. It's good off day. You have two games, as you mentioned, Bill, here at Wrigley Field. That's not exactly much of a respite with Houston coming to town on Thursday, but we talked about it. You know, this was going to be a juggernaut stretch, nine games against Houston and the Cubs, and so it should be fun to see how everything looks at Wrigley Field tomorrow night.
Total Tribe coverage, Tom Hamilton's take. Thanks, partner.
Thank you, Bill. And